Hi guys, can you hear me? Good, thank you. Thank you. Just want to say welcome to everybody. I've so enjoyed this morning in church. It's a joy to be here, really, for me and to listen to everybody share from their own wisdom and be supportive. And it's just so such a great experience for me. So I feel happy to be here. And I thank you all for being here with me, and for anybody that's listening on the radio, thanks for joining. I thought I'd share with you guys a clarification that another clarification that I got from Michael last week. There had been a piece in the Ruby Nelson section from last week, as well as the week before, that I was, at least last week, I was simply, almost like questioning in my mind why the use of that particular word. And I believe I commented something to of that. And so Michael was kind enough to respond, and I'll just share that with you guys. So we're in chapter six, which is Ruby Nelson, and the following quotes by Ruby Nelson are from the book The Door of Everything. And the direct path quotes from that book were chosen by Michael Langford and compiled into Experience Your Perfect Soul. And so we've been reading from chapter six for a bit now. And last week there was a sentence on page 186 that started by saying, "Contrary to racial belief, prayer is not the words you hastily repeat under conditions of stress when I am suddenly remembered by your surface mind. Prayer is the intense, predominant attitude in which your mind and feelings have indulged about the thing important to you." And I had commented on the racial belief, not really understanding, why that word was used. And at least for me, I think I actually went to the dictionary and looked up the word to see if there was some sort of alternate explanation to that word that maybe I was missing, but it still felt like a familiar definition. So I just kind of let that go. And Michael responded with this note. He says, "Hi, Kathy. When you read page 191, actually 191, he says 191, and I'm on page, it doesn't matter. I'm on page 188, where the word, where that, I'm sorry, 186, where the word, where racial belief was used." And he says, "When you, th this particular piece on 191 says, when you accept the race belief regarding any situation, failing to hunger for that increased understanding, you have erected a dam across the flow of truth." And that's the end of that quote. And Michael says, "If you substitute the word human for the word race, it should be easy to understand. The same when you see Ruby write the word racial." And that was the racial piece, was the piece that I read to you guys at the beginning from 186, "Contrary to racial belief." And then on 190, let's see, why am I missing the. I'm actually not seeing anything on page 190 that reflects the term racial. But at any rate, it doesn't matter. That's not the important. Oh, 191. Sorry. Yeah. Thank you, Karen. I just lost my mind. It's 190. Michael actually says that when you read page 191. Oh my gosh. Yeah. When you read page 191. It you will see, and here's the quote, when you accept the race belief regarding any situation, failing to hunger for that increased understanding, you have erected a dam across the flow of truth. End quote. And so then again, he says, if you substitute the word human for the word race, it should be easy to understand. The same when you see Ruby write the word racial. If you substitute the word human for the word racial, it should be easy to understand. Human beliefs. By race or racial, she is referring to the human race. Not only does this have nothing to do with racism, it is just the opposite. It is referring to one human race, regardless of how that human happens to appear. The beliefs that the human race has can be called race beliefs or racial beliefs. It would not have been my choice of wording. I would have said human beliefs instead of race beliefs or racial beliefs. However, I did not change even one word in the book, Experience Your Perfect Soul. I quoted the author's words exactly as they wrote those words. Take care with love, Michael. So again, I appreciated that clarification. And then he sent a funny follow-up, and I'll share it with you guys because it was just cute and funny. And you know, A Course in Miracles teaches us all the time, don't forget to laugh. And remember when we were talking about I was talking about being dishonest. I was talking about the audio that I had listened to, and I don't know the name of Michael's audio. I'd have to go back and check on that, but it was a fairly recent one, and it was asking me to look at all the ways during the course of a day that I lie. And one of the examples that I gave on that that popped into my head was, you know, if somebody asks you, does my butt look big in these jeans? And you say no, when in your mind, you know, you're thinking, oh my God, her butt looks huge, you're lying. And so he wrote, hi, Kathy, in your most recent Experience Your Perfect Soul sharing, you used the example of a little white lie. When someone asks, does my butt look big in these jeans? And one answers no. It was not a lie. When I told the woman, no, your butt does not look big in those jeans, I was thinking compared to an elephant's butt. Therefore, I was not lying. I hope you enjoyed this attempt to give you a good laugh. It did make me laugh. And it also gave me an opportunity to reflect on perception, how different my perception was than his. You know, an elephant's butt did never even crossed my mind in relation to answering that question. And so just that perspective alone was like, wow. I mean, clearly, we don't all see things the same way. Yeah, so thanks, Michael. I appreciated the laugh and the clarification. And also, yeah. Karen Wirth says, wow, the word racial shows me I still believe there are different races. Yes, I mean, that was my initial reaction in my mind when I saw that word used both times. It kind of felt like, wow, what an odd use of a word, because my conditioned mind mostly relates that word to, you know, differences in races. Racial, I mean, different races. And it seems to be such a topical subject right now, just on the world scene in general. It has been, you know, splattered and splashed and painted heavily in many, many ways, so that it's almost impossible to not, at least in a noticing sort of a way, being aware, not necessarily engaging in that wanting to see the differences, but recognizing in this relative world that that is the nature of the human existence. And so that very reference to racial was the first thing that popped in my mind. And it just was like, you know, I didn't have to question why that word was used. But, you know, when Michael says, just use human, the human belief, it's a human belief, contrary to human belief. Yeah. Okay. So we can put that aside and go on. Let's see. I believe I left off on page 188. Is that right? Do you have the record of the my folded page is now unfolded? So I'm assuming, let me see. We were talking about the ascension attitudes. Oh, yeah, one other idea that I'm just noticing on page 187. You cannot be in this world, but not of it, without first fulfilling the conditions that you live upward. That you live upward. I love that terminology. You live upward. You know, you're allowing the higher mind to guide you in your every decision. You ask beyond, up from your, you know, your basement level. You look up towards a higher existence, and by asking the wisdom that's within to, you know, help me be in this relative world that I seem to be experiencing. Let me not deny that, you know, that's the case, as that audio that Ken shared earlier, and I forget the guy's name. It was the first time I've ever heard him speak, but I thoroughly enjoyed his sharing, where he was very, at least to me, clear about, you know, don't try to deny your human existence. And he would just laugh so wholeheartedly about, oh, Fred somebody, I think it was, you know, still laughing at this character called Fred and all it seems to, Fred Davis, yes. All it seems to bring to you in this human experience, it's not about lying and saying, oh, I'm not experiencing that. If in fact you are, it's not about denying that and acting, you know, like you're, I don't know, beyond that human experience. It's not about that at all. And he was real sweet about saying, you know, that if that's the way it is, that's the way it is. The truth of who you are will always be true. At the same time, if you are, you know, having a human experience as well, integrate that into your higher upward living. Don't reject that. That's a mistake. That's a mistake. It's not you at all. It's not really even true at all. But if you think it is, don't lie to yourself about that. And again, this says you can't, and this is from the bottom of page 187. So thank you for letting me know, Cheryl. I left off on page 188. So I'm just going to reread this this last paragraph. You cannot be in this world, but not of it, without first fulfilling the conditions that you live upward until the threshold of that door is crossed. And the door is the door of everything that is from, that's the title of Ruby Nelson's book, The Door of Everything. And we were told in the very beginning that, wisdom is at the threshold of that door. And Jacqueline spoke to that too. It's not that, wisdom is, buried in some deep, dark cavern that we have to, take a flashlight and try to figure out where it's at and spend a lot. It's not like that at all. It's waiting for my acceptance, my willingness, my letting go of control, thinking I have any control whatsoever. And Jacqueline was speaking of, just how much she recognizes wanting to, have the intellect involved, wanting to somehow have my hand in the, helping to stir the pot of my quote, existence so that, I have some sort of assurance that everything goes at least, somewhat my way. And that resistance to completely surrendering into the trust, into the assurance that I don't have to even know what that is. It is already done. I just have to rest into the doneness of it and enjoy the offering of it. And that's that threshold where the wisdom, is waiting for my acceptance of it. It's already there. And I do that by living upward, right here in this human existence, by connecting within, by asking for guidance, by checking within. And she read to us, Jacqueline read to us a beautiful contemplation of surrendering to prayer and to asking and to the direct experience to know the truth of myself. And back to the book, it says, and you cannot fulfill these conditions as long as you insist on worshiping duality, on worshiping the good and evil of the earth. And that worshiping of duality, Jacqueline spoke to, it's like worshiping my own I know mind, I know something, and also acknowledging that I don't know, but still wanting both. And again, this is saying you cannot fulfill these conditions. You cannot be in this world, but not of it, as long as I insist on worshiping duality, on worshiping the good and evil of the earth. Loving me with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength becomes a very natural thing to do. When you have really taken my star of truth into your heart, secreting it in the closet of your consciousness, you will be unable to stop loving me, even if you tried. And I think Fred Davis spoke to that today in that audio. Once you've had that direct experience, that realization of the truth of who you are, that's not undone in any way, shape, or form ever. It is your direct experience. It is a viscerally felt, experience that cannot be denied. It can't. You can't go backwards. And you know, I've often I reflect on my own journey, and there's been times of intense frustration and impatience with what feels like a slow, lengthy, carefully prodded path, baby steps for, you know, like on and on and on and on. And there's been times when I've wanted to give up. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, I had this thought that I'm just going to drop out of Awakening Together Sanctuary, and you know, I don't know what I thought I was going to do. But every time I say those, every time I hear that voice in my head, and really look at it, and then ask, well, okay, so what happens from there? Even if you try to do that, I mean, the voice of reason pops in right away, or a truth saying comes to me, or something that maybe I've memorized in the past, just for my own access to it in times of need, serves me in that moment of doubt. And it's like I can't undo that. It's there, available to me right away, popping into my head. So, Becky's saying, it's so funny, Kathy. Last week I was in the very 1 half hour same spot. I spoke on this during my month, this very same place during my Monday night. On prayer. And Jacqueline certainly touched on her struggle with prayer as well. And that's what this piece has been speaking to us about, prayer not being the words you hastily repeat under conditions of stress when you suddenly remember in your surface mind as you're involved in some sort of a predominant attitude or a feeling or a thought or some sort of madness that's trying to convince you to give up, to give up, to stop. Turning your attention towards your true self. There's that really strong, at least for me, it's really strong, but I notice it. So, you know, as Karen says in our meditation, it's just a thought. It's not a big thought. It's not a little thought. It's not an anything thought. It's just a thought. And it's not even your thought. Because that's not you. You're not your feelings. You're not your emotions. You're not your story. You're not this drama that seems to be appearing in your mind in the form of somebody talking to you. Who is that somebody? That, you know, doesn't speak with a voice like the voice that you hear over the internet. But yet we seem to hear it. How does that happen? I mean, is it like a Casper the Friendly Ghost voice? I mean, what is this? I mean, what is this? The imagination voice. And yet there seems to be such a strong attraction to this seeming thing that doesn't seem to be me, but yet I notice it, so I'm the noticer. I'm simply noticing a thought. That's it. It's not even mine. It's not even true. So it says, for regardless of how often your surface mind may shout its doubts, there we are, your heart recognizes this familiar word, and your surface mind will eventually be put to shame. And it's true. You know, there's that point where I notice it's like, this is an absolutely crazy voice shouting in my mind right now. And I have the option to simply watch it. I don't have to listen to it. I don't have to obey it. I don't have to think it's anything. I can just let it be as it is. It doesn't have to affect me. And even if it does momentarily, the strength of, you know, practice, the strength of using our mantras, the strength of saying a prayer, the strength of stopping and remembering, who am I really? Who am I really? What really, you know, like I shared with you guys when I saw the bird hit by the car in front of us, and then, you know, had my husband, I know, after I gasped and he was like, what am I to do? You know, there was people behind us honking, and it's like my mind wanted to go to that. My heart wanted to stay sunken, but I recognized it right away. And I remembered the truth. I remembered the truth. So again, regardless of how often your surface mind may shout its doubts, your heart recognizes this familiar word, and your surface mind will eventually be put to shame. And I know that somewhere Michael recommends, I mean, he recommends not somewhere, but in several places, repeated readings of his work, repeated readings, hundreds and hundreds of times. And one of the reasons for that is that it then sticks with you. It's available to you. I have found that in my own personal experience, it's a terrific way to have it available. I don't mind memorizing it when at first it just seems to be a set of words, and maybe there's not that direct experience of it in a visceral sort of a way, but at least I have the words available. And that's just the start. That's the start. If I don't even have that, the mind quickly reverts back to its old conditioning and listening to something that seems to be an other, and yet, you know, is what? I'm a servant to that? I'm subject to that? I'm at the mercy of something that's within my own mind? And what would that be? So when that appearance seems to be loud, I can say, take this from me, Father. I do not want it. Or whatever you say in your mind. I see you. Sometimes I'll say, I see you, and you are not me. I am that which sees. I am. And I just affirm the truth. I just affirm the truth. I don't look for a reward. I don't look for some sort of shift. I don't look for some sort of peace. I don't look for anything. I'm just looking towards that in faith and dependence that it is my truth. It is my guide. It is my safety. It is my love. It is me. That's the real deal. One of the powers contained in your sunken treasure chest, the power to quicken and perfect, has been released and augmented by the light of Holy Spirit. That's interesting. One of the powers contained in your sunken treasure chest, the power to quicken and perfect, has been released and augmented by the light of Holy Spirit. None of my commandments are as hard to keep as has been thought if they are properly understood. I do not want you to exert force or overpowering effort in any one direction. This is not the method used by gentle, sweet, soft-spoken spirit. Rather, I would have you literally relax into an awareness of my presence, letting there be light within while you contemplate the truth. And I'm going to read that last line again. In our meditations, in our meditation instructions on our thoughts of awakening that Karen has so lovingly done for all of us, she does start us off by asking us to simply rest and relax from the stress of the day, or the stress of the evening, or the stress of the morning, or whatever stress you might be experiencing, and let that go and relax into the awareness of your truth, of your presence. To let go of everything else. And so that's what this is saying. Also, this is saying, this is, it says, rather, I would have you literally, now we're to take this literally, let's not see it any other way. Literally, I would have you relax into an awareness of my presence, letting there be light within while you contemplate the truth. The vibration of gratitude is such a mighty creative force that it alone, if indulged in continuously, could lift you free of the subcreation more rapidly than you realize. And if, you know, that brought me right to our thought of awakening number 33 for today that spoke directly to gratitude. And that says, gratitude is a peace that springs forth from within, from your own awareness of the truth of your being. You are grateful for the truth of your being, and you need no other reason to be grateful. Gratitude is the appreciation of truth. Celebrate gratitude today. And this speaks again, the vibration of gratitude. And that would be, and that gratitude is the appreciation of truth. We're so grateful for the truth of our being. And there's doesn't have to be any other reason for our gratitude except for the truth of our, when you think about it, you know, when I'm grateful for, you know, my brothers and sisters, I'm grateful for things. I'm grateful for my dog. I'm grateful for my husband. I'm grateful for my kids. You know, when we say those kinds of gratitude things, they're all temporary. All of them. I'm grateful to experience some love here and there. I'm grateful, you know, sometimes, you know, better about being grateful for the seeming, quote, bad stuff too, because there's something in there for me with that as well. Grateful for, That's saying, that's like saying about prayer. What am I praying to? What am I really praying to? And what am I really praying for? We can tie that in as well. The vibration of gratitude is the recognition or the realization or the truth of my truth. There's nothing more that we could be more grateful for than that. But if that's not the direct experience, if that's not like a direct experience, that's all I can say. Gratitude is often displaced. We try to be grateful, and I'm not saying don't try to be grateful. I always would recommend that upward living, even if it's not of the purity that's spoken about here. But there's a vibration to gratitude, and it's a love vibration. What else could it be? And Ken spoke to, Fred's. I was letting him know I enjoyed Fred Davis's audio, and he spoke to that notion of vibrating. I don't know if he used the word vibrating. Maybe it was a slightly different word. But there's that vibration where you notice yourself in that space of awareness, only aware of awareness, and then there's also the vibration of maybe being in the world, being in the world. There's also that vibration. It's the same love vibration. It's the same vibration. Yeah. But this is talking about the vibration of gratitude in the truest sense. It's such a mighty creative force that it alone, if indulged in continuously, could lift you free of the sub-creation more rapidly than you realize. So when we feel stuck, like I'm never going to get this, because this sub-creation, all of this, madness that I have imagined in the course of my 62 years, that sub-creation feels more concrete sometimes than the awareness of self, the I am self. And this is saying, just by indulging in the vibration of gratitude alone, that one tool, that alone could lift me free, lift me upward living of the sub-creation that I seemingly have managed to fool myself with for, this lifetime. So I'm grateful that that our lesson today, in Thoughts of Awakening, meshes so beautifully with what I just read. Let me grab a quick drink of my tea. Look at the grand cosmic being who stands out so sharply in your vision, and give thanks that this holy personage is none other than yourself. He is yourself. He has always been. He always has been. But since you have left him atrophy, wow, what an interesting word. Wow, like shriveled up, unused. What did that? There was a page that spoke directly to that, where it said, let me see if I can quickly find it. excuse me. Yeah, I'm not going to try to find it, but it talked about that very thing where it's this, you have this treasure chest and it's been, kind of ignored. Oh, here it is. Neglected, ignored, unused, forgotten, lying dormant in the treasure chest of the submerged mind. And so this is saying this grand cosmic being, which is really yourself, your holy personage, notice how it's not excluding, quote, the person. We have a clue that we're not the person, but yet we're not going to be dishonest and deny that maybe our experience still seems to be in the world as a person playing a role. But it's saying this grand cosmic being is yourself. That has always, he always has been, but since you have let him atrophy, give thanks that you can undo the act and see him rise to life. These three ascension attitudes. And just in case we've forgotten, their love, praise, and gratitude. These three ascension attitudes are your perfectly fitted keys. The keys to the door of everything. These keys are lovingly placed into your hands. You must use them persistently if you would see that door fly open. For it can be unlocked only from your side. Let some individualized aspect of these three ascension attitudes replace the stream of idle thinking that has been running through your mind, and your heart will be singing a glad prayer of contemplation. The kind of prayer that always brings results. Never think of your problems or shortcomings as you fill your mind with prayer. And Reverend Jacqueline was, sharing how her mind was using her home situation, and I shared how my mind was using my home situation to introduce fear once again, fear, and how subtle it can seem, these preservation strategies that arise. Reverend Jacqueline spoke to, as soon as one problem is solved, another one appears. It's never like, like she said, God help me sell my house so I don't have to have a short sale. God help me fix some sort of condition in the world so that I can find some peace. Because even if that prayer seems to be, quote, answered, is it not obvious to us all at this point that something else pops up in the next New York minute? I mean, come on, we know that. So, what is prayer really? What is gratitude really? I remember listening to Regina when I lived back in North Carolina, speak to that very idea of prayer. People say, pray for me. And the best way that I can pray for seemingly anyone else is to Recognize the truth, remember the truth of myself. That's the greatest prayer and appreciation that I could ever have, a prayer of gratitude for the truth of myself, which is the same as yours, no difference. Yeah. So again, this is telling us, never think of your problems or shortcomings as you fill your mind with prayer. As you weave these three ascension attitudes, again, those ascension attitudes are love, praise, and gratitude. As you weave those into the fabric of your daily life, you know, one of the ways we do that is loving all. You will be filled with great and mighty faith. For love, praise, and gratitude are major components of that essential attribute. Take up your keys, my beloved grand cosmic being. Take up your keys. Open wide the door. And enter your natural habitat. Your natural habitat. And remember, it can be unlocked only from your side. I love that image. Yeah. The door of everything and the ascension attitudes being the perfectly fitted keys, the keys to the door of everything lovingly placed in my hands. And he's saying, giving me direct direction. Use them persistently. Persistently. If you would see that door fly open. You know, the question is, do I want to see the door fly open? And it's only resistance to, you know, I know mind, service to self, me, 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 believing I'm the mind-body construct, falling into the trap of conditioning, emotions, feelings, judgments, you know, all of that, all of it. Many, many, many layers of ego preservation strategies. But if I am persistently, and consistently using love, gratitude and praise as a way of life, that unlocks the door. Yeah. And then again, the next piece of, you know, advice, let some individualized aspect of these three ascension attitudes, you know, if we can't like remember all of them, we can only find ourselves able to really do one of them or whatever, however, whatever works for you. Let that replace the stream of idle thinking that's been running in the mind. And that is where that memorization comes in. That is where, you know, simply using it and then noticing the difference between getting caught up in my story and, you know, galloping down the road with the story and how that makes me feel, as opposed to being able to stop right away at the very beginning and notice, whoa, what just went on there that I actually thought that was worth paying attention to? What you know, what was that I don't even have to know what it was about. I just know that I don't want that. And I can persistently turn back towards love, praise, and gratitude. It says, then your heart will be singing. Those experiences of a singing heart, you know, grow into a melody that's so strong it resonates around the world. A Course in Miracles tells us that as well. The song of prayer. The forgotten song. The glad prayer of contemplation. A prayer, this is a kind of prayer that always brings results. Because we know for sure in our past experience, praying from that point of wanting something or a lack aspect, yeah, sometimes you get what you ask for, and you know what? Sometimes you don't. So there's always uncertainty associated with that prayer. It's not prayer at all. It's a trick. Don't listen to that advice. Don't turn that way. Okay. Gosh, I'm close to my end time here. So then it goes on with another section that's called the supporting attitudes. The supporting attitudes. It will be most difficult to make love, praise, or gratitude a permanent quality if you fail to break the habit of judging by appearances. Excuse me. Again, it will be most difficult to make love, praise, or gratitude a permanent quality if you fail to break the habit of judging by appearances. It is only by keeping your eye single to the glory of my presence, the glory lying underneath appearances, that you are able to become familiar with the everlasting arms of Holy Spirit. And like I said, I had the appearance of, you know, a fairly large white bird being hit by a vehicle in front of me. It was, I didn't see it hit the bird, but I came to the bird after he pulled away. And the bird was obviously seemed to be in some sort in distress. And so that was upsetting to me. That appearance was a judgment that I made that this was a bad situation. This was a bird in pain. I made all kinds of judgments. This was an uncomfortable feeling for me. There was a sadness there, I noticed right away. A lot of things occurred very quickly. And, you know, I think I said out loud to my husband because, you know, it was uncomfortable for him too. He was driving the vehicle. And so right away in that noticing, it was those feelings felt very deep. And I knew that I didn't want to keep them. I acknowledged those appearances. I noted what was happening. I don't know that I felt grateful for it. I can't say that. I don't know that there was praise in my mind as I looked at those, you know, darker feelings. I don't know that, I don't even know that it was love. I think it was more fear. I think it was, matter of fact, I think it was all fear. And so, in recognizing that, I could have been easily fooled further with the voice that said, have you no heart? Have you no sympathy? Have you no compassion? Have you no, condemning me for not staying with a concern over that appearance? But I didn't let that happen. I just didn't. The depth of the short experience was enough. It literally, it's like my mind said, enough. No. I think I said to my husband, I'd rather acknowledge the truth of what is. That's more helpful to me right now. And he agreed. I want to acknowledge the truth. There's no joy there. And that is breaking the habit of judging by appearances. But it also wasn't denial of the appearance and denial or denial of the sadness or any of that. But it's telling us it will be most difficult to make love, praise, or gratitude a permanent quality if you fail to break the habit of judging by appearances. It is only by keeping your eye single to the glory of my presence, the glory lying underneath appearances, that you are able to become familiar with the everlasting arms of Holy Spirit. All the while, the web of appearances may be there to contend with, which is what I've just got through sharing an example with you guys in my experience. And then here's the advice. But let your troubled heart be still in the midst of this great storm. If you keep looking at appearances and judging difficulties to be my will, it is the same as closing off the avenue through which I help you. All appearances are abolished through increased understanding. When you accept the race belief regarding any situation, and again, Michael says we can substitute human. When you accept the human belief regarding any situation, failing to hunger for that increased understanding, you have erected a dam across the flow of truth. The hungry mind refuses to accept appearances. The obvious does not satisfy. I see that it's 2:30. I'm going to stop right there. And I am on page, yes, I'm on page 191, and I will, probably start at the top again. Maybe even start it over completely. Yes, 188 to 191, correct. Thanks, guys, so much for hanging with me. I absolutely love what I'm sharing with you from the Door of Everything, Ruby Nelson and Michael Langford's Direct Path quotes. I really appreciate your help, Michael, too, if you listen to this recording. I really do appreciate it. Thanks so much. Releasing the mic, guys.